Bill Roper looked out the window.
I believe everybody's here, and it's daylight. We'd just as well go amongst them.
Wes and Jim Ed were among the last ones out. Jim Ed looked around for the girl, but she'd gone on ahead. He saw her walking toward the horses with a big-shouldered young man who looked as if he might play for the Dallas Cowboys, or at least the Houston Oilers.
Geez, I might be from the city, but I'm not some Yankee snowbird come down from the north to enjoy Texas's advantages and then complain because it's not like where I escaped from.
He untied the bay horse and lifted his foot toward the stirrup. Wes looked over.
Well, hold on, Tater. You better lead old Rowdy around and work the kinks out before you mount him. He's been known to hump up a little.
Jim Ed blinked in surprise.
You ride him, don't you?
Well, yeah, but I didn't just come here yesterday. I've been riding horses like him all my life.
Jim Ed wondered how his grandfather had lived to be 77. Wes fell in beside his grandson, leading his own dun horse. Jim Ed had to assume he did so for the same reason.
It seems to me you've reached an age that you ought to ride gentle horses.
The beans ain't beans without a little chili powder in them.
He watched his grandfather speak quietly to the dun horse and pat it on the neck, then grasped the reins and a bit of the mane in his left hand, the saddle horn in his right.
Yep.
He swung up with the ease of a young man just eligible to vote. Jim Ed tried to emulate him, but the grace was lacking. So was the horse's patience. Rowdy never let Jim Ed's right boot find the stirrup. He took a long jump that bounced Jim Ed almost high enough for his foot to hit the camera. The second jump divorced Jim Ed entirely from the saddle. His belly took the first impact, his jaw the second, making his teeth hurt all the way out to his ears. He pushed up on his hands. Wes looked down from the saddle.
You better get up and climb back on him, else he'll think he's got away with it.
Jim Ed pushed slowly to his feet. He expected to see the horse running away, but Rowdy stood there calmly watching him.
I thought he did get away with it.
Only if you don't get back on him. You always got to watch old Rowdy first thing in the morning. He's playful.
Jim Ed heard several men and boys chuckling. What cut worst of all, however, was a higher-pitched giggle that he knew came from Glory B. He made a point of not looking at her. He reached reluctantly for the reins, afraid the horse would pitch again before he could even get back into the saddle.
Boy, he's had his fun for the morning. He ain't greedy. Get back aboard before you spoil him.
I wouldn't want to do that.
His glance caught the girl's brown eyes, still laughing silently. His face warmed. He hoped to see her do something clumsy, but she boarded her blue roan horse with a flash and a flare that he suspected were for his benefit. Jim Ed took a tight grip on the saddle horn and swung up. The horse stood still this time. Bill Roper smiled.
You done good, Tater. A lot of town boys would have never gotten back on.
Jim Ed nodded a grateful acknowledgement for even a small compliment. Black horse across the way crow-hopped a little with the brawny young man he had seen walking with the girl.
Way to go, Shorty!
At least the action drew attention away from Jim Ed.
Who is that girl?
Wes narrowed his eyes, covering a smile.
Yeah, she's already stuck a burr under your blanket, ain't she?
I get a pain from women in hobnail boots who bust their butts trying to prove they can do anything a man can.
She's already proved it to just about everybody around here. I expect she wants to be sure you know.
Know what?
That she's a Dawson. She was a cowgirl before she was old enough to be a schoolgirl. Try to get the best of Glory B, and you'll look like you fell through an outdoor toilet.
Glory B? Sounds like some tabernacle evangelist.
Maybe so. She's made more than one smart aleck old boy ask his maker for mercy. Her mama named her Gloria Beth. But she's the only one who called you that. Don't you be trying any big city tricks on Glory B. She's been there.
Jim Ed expected more treachery from the bay, but the horse seemed gentle as a dog. The riders moved single file through a plank gate held open by Johnny Roper. The boy took his time closing the gate, then spurred the horse into a lope to catch up. Jim Ed suspected he had opened the gate for a chance to enjoy the run afterward, for he had the look of a cat that had just whipped the dog. Bill Roper looked back disapprovingly, but said nothing. The boy made a studious effort not to see. Jim Ed had heard the word roundup as long as he could remember, but he had no idea how one was conducted, nor had he felt any particular desire to learn. He sensed a contagious excitement in the riders around him, including his grandfather. He discerned that most did not live on ranches. They came from town. Though livelihood might be derived from office or store, from selling insurance or making sick motors run again, family roots were sunk firmly in the shallow, black, flint-laced soil of this challenging land. Wes pointed to first one man, then another, as he rode next to Jim Ed.
His daddy used to have a little ranch down the river from the Injun Bluffs till the 50s drought broke him. And him, the old home place wasn't big enough for all the boys to stay, so he let his brother have it and taken up to study law.
Wes indicated a considerably overweight man whose light complexion bespoke little time spent in the sunshine.
It was a damn shame about Rupert there. The country lost a fine cowpuncher when he taken up school teaching.
What are they all doing here then? They can't earn much from a day's work on horseback.
They ain't getting paid no more than me and you are. They just come out for a chance to ride a horse and chase a few cattle. That's why Bill sets his cow works for a Saturday.
The unions had better never hear about this. The Chatfield-Dawson Ranch is getting a lot of labor without paying for it.
There's people penned up in your cities that'd pay $100 to do what we're doing today and be tickled at the price. We're getting it free.
Jim Ed shrugged.
Big deal.
Ah!
His bay jumped to one side as an armadillo broke from beneath a clump of shinery oak and scurried into a hole under an upturned, rotting live oak tree. Jim Ed gripped the saddle horn to keep his seat. He saw a quiet reproach in his grandfather's eyes. An experienced cowboy would not have to grab leather.
There was a time when Bill Roper would have driven to San Angelo and hired him a first-rate crew. Used to be some good cowpunchers hanging around the Naylor Hotel and Donahoe's Saddle Shop waiting for a day's work. But them old boys have died out or got stove up or found better pay doing something else. So Bill makes do with kids and neighbor help and people he can coax out from town. Things ain't like they used to be. Times I wonder if they ever was.
The riders, strung out in twos and threes, held their horses to an easy trot and followed a net wire fence. The schoolboys clustered together, chattering and laughing and dropping their voices to tell jokes they wouldn't want the Dawson girl to hear. Jim Ed thought that was a wasted effort. She probably knew worse stories than they did. She rode beside the big athlete on the black horse. Jim Ed wondered idly if that was her idea or his. Not that he gave a damn one way or the other. Already sore from the fall, Jim Ed would have bet a six-pack of long-neck beers that the riders had traveled 5 miles before they reached the pasture's far side. Wes told him it was more like two.
First full-time cowboy job I ever had was on the C-bars. Them days it was 10 miles to the backside in most of their pastures, but the country's been whittled down. Nowadays you can spit from one fence to another.
And you don't approve?
It was necessary. Approving and liking ain't the same.
Jim Ed pondered the difference as Bill Roper led the procession along the fence. After a couple of hundred yards, he looked back.
Wes, if you and Tater wouldn't mind, I'll drop you all off here. You'll probably want to give us a while to get on the road.
Best offer we've had since the coffee.
Jim Ed watched while the rest of the riders went on. His gaze followed the Dawson girl until she and the big bruiser named Shorty disappeared in the cedars. He watched his grandfather fish a cigarette out of a pack, a stubbed finger, an inconvenience, but not a real handicap.
Bill will drop the rest off one at a time till he gets to the other side. Then we'll form a line and push the cattle back the way we come. Bill gave me and you the shortest and easiest way to go, right down the fence.
That's all there is to a roundup? Seems kind of tame.
It wouldn't have been in the old days, but now they bred these cattle for gentle. A few may snort a little and try to cut back, but it's all bluff, like most people. Call their hand and they'll turn around.
Like you're calling the bluff on those lake people?
Wes took a long drag on the cigarette and did not reply. Jim Ed turned his head to one side, but cautiously cut a glance at his grandfather. He saw pain in those pale gray eyes. This perhaps might be Wes Hendricks' last roundup, save for the one that would gather the livestock from his little ranch for a final time. This one, at least, he could enjoy. Jim Ed resolved to say no more about the lake and spare the old man that provocation. Bill Roper dropped Fuller Gibson out of the group and left him to wait a couple of hundred yards away. Jim Ed smiled, thinking how relieved Roper must be not to have to listen to Gibson for a while.
There's a man who could lay a chill over a 4th of July barbecue.
Yeah, he was just a working cowboy till he married a ranch. Used to cuss the rich. Used to argue that they ought to take up all the money in the country, put it in one pot, and let everybody dry it equal. Now he plays the stock market and cusses the government. There ain't no better cure for a socialist than a little dose of capital.
Gibson dismounted and walked a few steps, stretching his legs, straining off some of the morning coffee. Jim Ed thought of the time lost waiting in the camp house for daylight and waiting now for the rest of the riders to reach the far side of the pasture. He could have spent that time in bed.
Yeah, the old army game. Hurry up and wait. There's an old saying they used to throw at me when I was a budding. I know you're hungry and I know you're tired, but if you didn't want to work, you oughtn't have hired.
I didn't hire. I got sent.
He realized he had said too much.
Yeah, by your daddy, to try and talk me into selling out and hanging up my saddle.
He wouldn't have sent me on that errand.
He must have said something.
He said the more somebody tried to argue with you, the stronger you set your mind.
You probably noticed your daddy inherited the same trait.
Yeah, it's been hard to overlook.
I may not have given Truman much else, but I gave him a double dose of stubbornness. Ain't nobody going to run over your daddy without he has a hell of a fight.
Jim Ed remembered the long, awkward silences between his father and his grandfather on the rare occasions he had seen them together. Once they progressed beyond the weather and perhaps a few words on state and national politics, they seemed to have exhausted the extent of their common ground. Father and son remained forever strangers. In recent years, Jim Ed's relationship to his father had become no better than his father's to Wes. Fuller Gibson remounted after a while and began walking his horse forward.
Let him move on a little ways before we start, so any cattle he pushes in our direction won't cut behind us.
By the time the two riders got underway, Jim Ed could hear the bawling cattle disturbed by other riders. The calves and their anxious mothers were becoming separated. He found himself somehow drawn to the distant sound, as he had at times been drawn to the distant moaning of a train in the night, a train going somewhere far away. The first animals Jim Ed and Wes encountered were sheep, ewes with big early spring lambs already well along toward the size of their mothers. A ewe stamped her foot, and the animals broke into a run. They fanned apart at first, then drew back together.
Let's skirt around and leave them be. No use throwing sheep into the cattle drive.
For a while, it seemed the sheep wanted to join the drive, but they kept moving ahead of the horsemen. But after a time, they came upon the fence and stopped to look back. Satisfied that Wes and Jim Ed were passing them by, they stayed. Lambs dropped to their knees and began to punch at their mother's udders. Jim Ed smiled, but the size of the lambs made it a ridiculous sight.
Most of the milk is probably dried up already. Them lambs ain't getting much from their mamas but companionship. Which ain't no small thing, I guess. Everybody needs companionship sometimes. I suppose you found that out for yourself by now, ain't you, Tater?
I do all right.
You got a girl?
No steady one right now. Just play the field.
Nothing wrong with that, I suppose. Long as a young fella don't get careless and have to pay the fiddler for the dance.
I've never been that careless.
I hope so, because some of them birds can sting worse than a bee. It wasn't some such of a girl trouble that brought you out here, was it?
No.
Jim Ed felt surprised a man so far over the hill would even harbor thoughts on such a subject.
Just wondered. Nowadays it seems like all the kids taking free samples before they're your age. Not like my time. Them days we had respect.
I don't suppose you ever took any samples.
Wes turned his head toward a clatter in the cedar brush.
Watch now. Fuller's pushing some cattle towards us.
Glory B. Dawson reveled in her natural element, working cattle on horseback, especially on her blue roan. The animal had an easy flowing saddle gait she cherished, for it could carry her miles across the constant challenge of the Chatfield Dawson Ranch's broken terrain without overly tiring her. She listened to the strike of horses' hooves and glanced around as Shorty Bingham's black mount stumbled, then caught itself.
When are you gonna swap that horse for a good one? He'll fall over his shadow one of these days and flatten your face up against a rock.
Shorty grinned. Since the second grade, she had been able to say outrageous things to him without drawing a spark of resentment.
Him and me are a pretty good match. We're both a little klutzy.
If anyone else said that, she would take offense in Shorty's behalf. She had done so many times. True, he could be a little awkward. A big, blundering mule of a man who did not fully realize the extent of his own strength. But he harbored no pretensions, no illusions. He took life head on, the way it came at him, and didn't ask for favor or allowances. Since their school days together, he had stood between her and anyone who would dare to make light of the fact that she wore her clothes like a boy and would rather ride in a horse show than dance at a school prom. And she challenged more than one who disparaged Shorty Bigum as nothing more than a big, dumb football player whose father owned a trucking company. Off to her left, she could see Bill Roper's son, Johnny. And beyond him, Bill himself, taking the outside of the drive. The longest and most difficult ride. Johnny was slapping a coiled rope against his leg, trying to scare along a young calf that didn't understand what the strange creature wanted of it. The calf's mother, ambling a little ahead, kept turning and bawling for her offspring to follow.
That's a pretty sight. I missed it when I was away at school.
I don't know what you wanted to keep going to school for anyway. You already know more than you'll likely ever use. How much college does it take to teach you how to follow a cow and calf?
There's a lot more to it than just following. There's genetics and range management and marketing. You can't learn it all on horseback, sad to say.
What good will all that do if you have to sell out?
She gave him a sharp look that was as near reproach as she ever got with Shorty, who had seldom been reticent about saying what was turning in his mind, even when reticence would have been a virtue.
Who told you we're selling out?
I hear talk. They say your grandmother's gone just about to the end of her string. They say she's trying to run the place like her daddy did, and your granddaddy did, and it just won't cut the mustard anymore.
My great-grandfather Chatfield started putting this place together when he came home from the Spanish-American War. There are three generations of us still living here, and there'll be hell among the yearlings before this family sells out.
There's been other ranches have to sell out, older than this one. Even these old rocky hills will wear down with time.
These old rocky hills will wear down a lot more before we give them up. If anybody tells you different, send them to me. I'll straighten them out.
Just telling you what I've heard.
He pulled the black horse into a walk beside Glory B's road, his face apprehensive.
I wouldn't want to stay in Big River if you had to leave here.
She reached out and placed an affectionate hand on his arm.
Don't you be listening to any more talk like that. I was raised on this ranch. I intend to raise my kids here.
Yours and who else's? It takes two for that.
There'll be time enough.
I'm ready to start whenever you are.
I'm surprised at you letting your mind dwell on such things.
I can't help it. My mind naturally runs that away, watching how a horse bounces you up and down.
Involuntarily, she brought a hand up to her bosom. A flash of warmth came to her face. It was not an unpleasant sensation. Glory B smiled.
I suppose that's as close as you'll come to asking me to marry you.
Oh, I never was good with words.
We'll see, Shorty. We'll see. Yeah!
That was as near as she was going to come to giving him a definite maybe. They pushed the cattle through scattered cedar and broad stretch of knee-high shin oak growth toward a high, flat-topped hill which lay beyond the camp corrals. As the drive narrowed down and the riders began closing with each other, the cattle converged into a sizable, noisy herd. Through the dust, Glory B could see Wes Hendricks on the far side against the fence with his grandson, Dallas.
I see the city boy didn't get lost.
He had his grandfather watching out for him. Wes knows Live Oak Camp like he knows his own bedroom. They tell me he batched here once a long time ago. He cowboyed for my great-grandfather, he and Orville Levitt both.
Old Orville? That runs a drugstore? Hard to picture him as a cowboy.
Well, he was. I heard my grandmother talk about them.
You don't find many like Wes still around.
And when he's gone, who'll take his place? Not that rock and roll grandson, that's for damn sure.
You ever see him before?
Not that I remember. Why?
You jumped on him awful hard this morning is all. I thought maybe you already knew him.
As far as I know, this is the first time I ever laid eyes on him. If I'm lucky, it'll be the last.
It just struck me funny that you got on his case so quick. Maybe he reminds you of somebody.
He reminds me of a type I ran into when I first went off to school. Know-it-all big city boys who think it's their God-given mission to deliver the gospel to us poor, benighted colonials from way out here in the boonies.
She realized her voice went bitter, and she tried to take the sting from it.
He just seems to fit the pattern.
That first Christmas you came home from school, I knew you'd changed. I figured somebody must have hurt you pretty bad.
She could not bring herself to look him squarely in the eyes. Damn, but he could be perceptive sometimes for a big, dumb football player.
Anybody ever treat you like that, you send him to me. I'll clean his plow for him.
She felt the color rise again, and this time it was an unpleasant sensation.
There's a cow and a calf yonder. They're fixing to try and cut back on you.
Jim Ed had grimly set his mind to endure the roundup with the straightest face he could muster, like a midterm examination for which he hadn't cracked a book. However, the sight of a dozen red and white Hereford cows and their calves stirred the bay horse to excitement, and Jim Ed found himself caught up, to some degree, in the contagion. The cattle's only evident purpose was to get away as they trotted at an angle 50 yards beyond Jim Ed and Wes. One cow jerked up her head in surprise. She evidently had regarded herself as having escaped from the other horsemen who had disturbed her early morning grazing. Jim Ed was intrigued by the way the horse rowdy followed the cattle with its alert ears and seemed to want to close with them.
He's like Pepper. He wants to work.
Likes to pitch, too.
He just don't like your hat.
The cattle confronted the net wire fence and stopped. The dominant cow of the bunch raised her head high and looked back. Seeing that the horseman moved toward her, she struck a long trot down the fence. Jim Ed caught a whiff of dust raised by the hoofs as the others followed her. He surmised by the satisfaction in his grandfather's face that all was progressing as it should. Wes Hendricks' shoulders had squared, and his back was straight as a hoe handle. Sitting on a horse seemed to wipe years from the etched scoreboard of his face. As he watched those cattle and listened to others bawling in the distance, his eyes lighted with the fires of remembrance. Jim Ed looked down the fence again.
I must be missing something.
What?
You're seeing something I don't. Your eyes must be different.
It's all this.
Wes made a sweeping motion.
The country, the cattle, the morning cool, all of it. Hell, boy, you've got nothing like this in the city.
These ranches all look the same to me. Nothing but limestone hills and live oak trees and cedar brush.
It all goes to what you've taught your eyes to see. To me, one city house appears the same as any other. But on my place or here on Live Oak, you could lead me anywhere blindfolded and I could tell you where I'm at.
It still all looks the same to me.
Wes stared at something in the distance.
Best job I ever had was here on Live Oak Camp. Just a button of 20 when I come. Younger than you are now. Sometimes wished I'd never left.
Why did you?
Because I was a button. A button's always got an itch to travel, looking for something better down the road. It ain't there, usually, but he has to go and see for himself. I growed up on the plains, on a little old starve-out ranch so flat you could see into the middle of next week. I always wanted to live where they had hills, so I come south hunting for work. They was needing a hand on the old Chatfield outfit. That was before I was the Chatfield Dawson. Old Major Chatfield, he'd been with Teddy Roosevelt's Rough Riders. He sent me over here to Live Oak. I come to love this place.
The cattle heading in the right direction now, the two riders moved together.
But you left it.
There was reasons. I had taken it in my head I wanted to rodeo. I broke Bronx for the Chatfields, and I was a middling good hand with a loop. But the Major had a rule against roping stock without good cause. One day I was practicing on some calves when I seen the old Major himself a-watching me. He didn't talk, just rode off looking grieved and waited for me at the house. We ate dinner without hardly a word. Finally he says, I hate to let you go, Wes, would you promise me you won't ever rope any more stock? He wasn't a man I could lie to. I says, I wouldn't want to make you a promise I couldn't keep. So I rolled up my bedding and taken off down the road. But I never could get this place out of my mind. When I was older and finally able to buy a little acreage of my own, I wanted it close to Live Oak. Everything I ever done, I patterned after the ways the Major taught me. A cowman he was, and a gentleman. No better man ever lived.
Blinking, Wes looked toward the distant bawling of cattle.
Them was good times. Good people. Ain't many things still like they was then. Live Oak Camp comes as close as anything.
Jim Ed thought not much has changed at your ranch either, except that you've gotten older. But on reflection, he knew that was not true. The old man had electricity, he had a pickup and a trailer. He had a steel barn, even had television. But one thing would never change. A mindset that went back to Teddy Roosevelt, and probably farther. A sobering question came to him.
When I'm his age, will I be telling everybody that the good old days ended when I stopped being young?
Dust arose from the stirring of all those hooves, though recent rains had greened the grass. Jim had reflected that the only thing about this country which could bring a tear to his eye was the dust. Two steel windmills stood outlined against a big flat-topped hill, stair-stepped by alternating layers of limestone like a massive birthday cake. Jim Ed realized he was almost back to the corrals. The scattered riders moved together again, pushing what seemed a tremendous herd of cattle.
Must be 500 or 600.
No, how do you expect to get along in the world if you don't know how to count?
Wes made several fast motions with his right hand, the fingers spread apart.
Yeah, about 100 cows, maybe a couple more, with late calves at their sides. That many all bawling for one another, the noise will make you think there's 1,000 of them. It's like coyotes. Two of them boogers at night will make you imagine there's 12.
Several Angora goats had become mixed up in the drive, though the horsemen had managed to leave the sheep behind.
Wherever you don't want a goat to be, that's the first place to go and look for.
A slim rider on a blue roan horse rode slowly among the cattle and worked the goats to the outside. Jim Ed was impressed by the easy skill that maneuvered the animals without stirring them to fright. The dust cleared a little, and he realized he was watching the Dawson girl.
I guess they put up with her because she's the boss's daughter.
The boss's granddaughter. Her daddy got killed in a car wreck a couple years ago. They put up with her because she's the best cowboy here, barring Bill Roper, and maybe me. If I was you, I'd watch Glory B and learn.
No sunburned country girl's got anything to teach me.
I wished I'd had the chance to train you when you was the age of Bill Roper's boy.
But he'll probably be a cowboy the rest of his life. I won't.
Johnny's got a sharp mind and a set of hands that can do anything he takes a notion to. It don't matter what trade he goes into. He'll be a better man because he learned to be a good cowboy. I don't remember hearing what kind of trade you're figuring on.
I've been majoring in business administration. Dad always badgered me to be an accountant, like he is. It's safe and sure, he says, but the longer I went, the less I liked the idea of being chained to ledgers and accounts and a computer terminal all my life.
He didn't tell Wes that he had sloughed off and flunked the final semester of his senior year.
I don't know what I want.
Well, if you don't know what 'tis, you'll never get it.
Jim Ed followed his grandfather and the cattle into the pen, dust burning his eyes, making him cough. Roper's son closed the plank gate behind them. The other riders led their horses into an adjacent empty pen. Jim Ed swung down from the saddle and was immediately dismayed.
Whoa.
His tired legs tried to buckle. Swaying, he grasped the saddle for support. The ground seemed only inches from his face, and it was moving.
You ain't used to this. You've been sitting high up on that horse all morning, and now all of a sudden you can't tell how far it is to your feet. Be careful how you step away. You're liable to eat a mouthful of dirt, or something.
The girl walked by, leading her roan horse.
Hang in there, Pilgrim. We'll make a man out of you yet.
You're trying to make a man out of yourself. I don't think you've got the materials.
Majoring in anatomy, are you, Pilgrim?
Her anatomy didn't look like much to him, hidden beneath a dusty, slouchy old shirt and faded jeans. He supposed it must suit that big old boy who looked like a football player, though, because he was walking fast to catch up with Glory B. Jim Ed glanced at Wes.
Is it lunchtime?
He wasn't hungry, but he wished he could lie down somewhere and rest, even if on the hard ground.
We got time to scout that pasture for dinner and pick up any cattle we missed, unless your butt's too sore to ride.
Is she going?
I expect she will.
Then my buck can stand it. Maybe I'll get lucky and see her fall on hers.
The ride gave him ample time for regret. He could feel grimy sweat between his rump and the saddle, and on the insides of his legs where the leather rubbed. The salt from perspiration set up a burning that persisted no matter how he shifted his weight. He stood in the stirrups at intervals, hoping for relief, but his aching knees made him sit again. The torment was always there. Wes seemed aware of his discomfort, if not particularly sympathetic.
You'll toughen up. You can't appreciate heaven till you've been through hell.
Unwilling to acknowledge any problem, Jim Ed gritted his teeth and kept his gaze set straight ahead. The scouting seemed to take longer than the first drive, but Jim Ed realized that the galling of his rump and the insides of his legs made 2 hours stretch like four. The rider's sweep picked up only 6 cows and their calves. It hardly seemed worth the effort, he thought. The sight of the 2 windmills was as welcome as the ringing of the bell at the end of Friday classes. Inside the corral, Jim Ed dismounted with care and deliberation. He walked stiff-legged, trying to find some manner of moving that would not aggravate the searing heat between his buttocks. Each step made the jeans rub fire against his thighs.
Dinner time. Tie your horse, Tater.
Jim Ed might have shown more interest in death than in food. He wondered where he would find strength to endure the second half of this interminable day. He tried to keep up with his grandfather as the crew walked toward the old camp house, but the pain held him to short steps, and he fell behind. Bill Roper waited at the door while the others went in.
Tater, the first couple days I got home from the Army, I thought the chaplain would kill me. Wait here a minute.
Wes was back shortly with an old towel and a can of talcum powder. His smile spoke more of sympathy than of amusement.
Slip off out yonder behind the windmill. Wash yourself good and use plenty of this powder where you hurt the most. It won't cure you, but it'll raise your odds for survival.
Jim Ed knew no way to express the depth of his gratitude. He quickly followed Roper's instructions and found himself walking with less pain. He began to entertain serious hope of eventual recovery. He met the men and boys coming outside with filled plates, carrying iced tea and big fruit cans, or hot coffee and crock mugs large enough to drown a small cat. Wes moved among them.
Better hurry in there, Tater. A man won't get rich, cowboy, and for this outfit or any other, but he'll eat good.
A friendly, pretty-eyed woman, younger than his mother, stood beside the stove, wiping her hands on a flower-spotted apron, prompting each passing man and boy to take more. When one of them called her Hallie, he knew she was Bill Roper's wife. She turned to her son.
You, Johnny, you skimped on everything but the butter and the biscuits. You go back and put some more meat on that plate, and some frijoli beans.
The boy reddened, looking uneasily at his school friends, but he complied. The woman's attention went to Jim Ed. She gave him a quick appraisal, her gaze touching but a moment on his hat. He thought her handsome, considering that she was probably on the downhill side of her 30s.
You'd be Wes's grandson.
I'm Jim Ed Hendricks from Dallas.
Glory B. Dawson stood at the kitchen cabinet with the big football player. She was eating from her plate beside the sink. Her smile was wicked.
This pilgrim moves like a turtle with rheumatism. But since the working crew has been fed, I guess we can let him have some leftovers.
Hallie gave Jim Ed an easy smile that took 10 years off her age.
They call you Tater, I believe. Tater, I can't say you look much like Wes, except that neither one of you has enough flesh on your bones to stand up against a March wind. You feel that plate good now, you hear? I won't let you away from this house till I see you loosen that belt.
Few things made Jim Ed more uncomfortable than women who wanted to baby him. His mother and her sisters had always made a big to-do, leaving him feeling like some helpless child. He tried to make allowances, telling himself they all meant well. But his present embarrassment was all the worse because the Dawson girl took it in with an air of faint derision. He gave her a challenging glance and made his way to the door with a full plate and a can of iced tea. He found a place in the dense shade of an ancient live oak tree near Wes. Several young cowboys squatted on their heels. Jim Ed tried, but was too sore. He sat flat on the ground like most of the older men whose knees no longer tolerated abuse. The first bite told him his grandfather had not exaggerated Hallie's cooking. The solid food soon made him forget at least some of his soreness. Jim Ed assumed the men would rush through the meal and go directly back to work, but they stretched on the grass in the shade of the trees. Wes lay on the hard wooden porch and dropped off to sleep. Some of the younger boys went to a large round concrete water tank and found a cane pole with a line and a fish hook on it. They scratched around and came up with a couple of bugs, which they impaled on the hook and cast into the water. They fished with considerable determination, but without any luck. Jim Ed had noticed young Johnny Roper observing him with the same open curiosity as yesterday.
I must look to him like I've just climbed out of a tree. Or a flying saucer.
After about an hour, Bill Roper quietly got up from the porch and sauntered casually toward the corrals to prepare the fire for the branding irons. Wes untied his dun horse and tightened the girth he had loosened before dinner. He swung into the saddle and took down his rope.
Yep. How's your chapping?
Jim Ed had not admitted to anything.
What chapping?
Then I reckon you'll be up to flanking calves. Just watch you don't get a hoof in your mouth. They don't chew easy.
He wrapped the end of his rope around the saddle horn and tied a half hitch.
Pair up with somebody. Show them how quick a college boy can learn.
I'll pair with him, Wes, and teach him how it's done.
Glory B. Dawson held her jaw square, those large brown eyes laughing at him.
Every time I turn around, you're digging your spurs into me. What do you think I am, a horse?
Maybe next time you won't take it for granted that just because I'm a woman, I can't do anything but cook.
I meant it for a compliment. I'll make it a point not to compliment you anymore.
You smart-ass city men are always trying to show us country bumpkins our rightful place. Well, you're on my turf now. Maybe we can show you a few things.
You could show a little humility for starters, but that won't happen.
Jim Ed looked at the calves. He judged them to weigh considerably more than he did.
You really think you're going to wrestle those down?
We're going to do it, you and I. It's all timing and leverage. How are you on timing and leverage, Pilgrim?
I haven't had any complaints.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Roper was whetting a large pocket knife on a dark gray stone. He frowned at Glory B.
Your mother wouldn't hold with you wrestling calves. Wouldn't think it's ladylike.
I didn't study to be a lady, I studied to be a rancher.
She doesn't think much of that either, I've noticed.
She's not here anyway. She went to... Well, she's gone.
Oh.
Bill Roper turned away. Jim Ed caught something in Glory B's eyes. Anger, perhaps, or hurt.
But my grandma will be here, and it always pleases her to see me making a hand.
She feeling better?
Some. She said she'd be here.
Glad to hear it.
Roper jiggled the irons in the butane heater, lifting one for a quick look.
They're hot!
Wes Hendricks rode his horse slowly toward the bunched calves. They split apart at his approach. He picked a calf on the outside, moved in behind him, and snaked a small loop down in front of the hind legs. The calf stepped into it, and Wes jerked up the slack. Holding the rope taut, he turned the horse and came out in a brisk trot, dragging the bewildered animal on its belly. When he stopped dragging, the calf struggled to get to its feet.
You grab the tail. I'll take the rope.
She went down the opposite side of the rope from Jim Ed and gripped it with both hands a few inches from the calf's hind feet.
Now!
She jerked hard. Uncertain, Jim Ed pulled the tail without much effect. The calf staggered but remained on its feet.
Timing, Pilgrim, timing! You've got to do it when I do. Now pull!
He yanked on the tail as she jerked the rope in the opposite direction. The calf's hind feet flipped into the air toward Glory B. Its rump flopped over toward Jim Ed. He stepped back, but not quickly enough to keep the calf from striking him just below the knees and knocking him backward. He found himself suddenly seated in the soft sand, the struggling calf lying across his feet.
It's him that's supposed to be down, not you. Get up from there and grab his foreleg and drop your knee on his neck so he can't get up.
Uncomfortably aware that several men and boys were watching, Jim Ed pushed up to his feet and grabbed at the flailing foreleg twice before he took a firm grip. The calf flung its head in fright. Jim Ed had difficulty in finding how to use his weight on its neck to hold it still. Glory B ducked under the rope, gripped the kicking left hind leg, and dropped to the ground on her hip pockets. She shoved the heel of her boot snugly against the calf's right leg to hold it out of action.
See there? Use the calf's own weight and movement against him, just like martial arts.
It didn't surprise Jim Ed that she knew about martial arts. Wearing leather gloves to protect his hands, Fuller Gibson brought a hot branding iron and stamped a C-bar on the calf's left hip. The smoke had a yellowish tinge and burned fiercely at Jim Ed's nostrils. He saw that Glory B was blinking and assumed it was stinging her eyes. It was reassuring to know she was not immune from all of life's inconveniences. A cowboy walked up with a large syringe in his hand and administered beer-colored vaccine under the animal's skin. Bill Roper's sharp pocket knife deftly turned the bull calf into a steer.
You'll have to pull his head up, Tater, so I can reach his right ear.
One swipe of the blade left a swallow-forked notch oozing a thin line of blood. Roper's son Johnny came along with some thick black liquid in an old coffee can and dabbed it on the freshly cut scrotum.
All right, Pilgrim. You can let him up.
As Jim Ed released his hold, the calf scrambled free. Glory B clung to its tail and let the calf's forward motion pull her to a stand.
Now then, don't you ever let it be said that a cowboy life is not romantic.
Jim Ed saw the calf's blood smeared across his hand. He looked down at his legs and saw fresh green manure clinging to his jeans.
I wouldn't have missed it for the world.
Wes timed his healing and dragging to keep two flanking crews busy. Jim Ed learned after the first three or four that throwing the calves was easy if he coordinated his moves with Glory B's. He found himself enjoying the physical challenge of matching his weight and strength against that of the animals. Bill Roper finished whittling on a calf.
Watch your granddaddy out there, Tater. You never see his like again. He plays that rogue like Charlie Daniels plays a fiddle. Ain't many men got that knack anymore. I seen him heal calves in a branding pen all afternoon and never miss more than one or two.
Why not? Anybody better be pretty good at what he does for a living.
Pretty good. That old man is better than good. I wish I could rope Pap as well.
Not for some time did Jim Ed see his grandfather miss a loop. But finally, Wes missed once, twice, and again. He slumped in the saddle, staring at the saddle and at the end of the rope, lying on the ground with its loop drawn up small and empty. Bill Roper walked out to him.
Wes, you feeling all right?
Just a little tired all of a sudden.
Glory B's probably hitching the heel a few. Why don't you let her spell you a while?
Glory B didn't wait for further invitation. She hurried into the adjacent corral for her horse. She tightened the girth, swung up, and tied the rope securely against the horn. She looked to the big football player who had been underemployed since the branding started.
Shorty, why don't you team up with the Pilgrim yonder? We wouldn't want him to miss any of the glamour of the cowboy life.
Shorty. Jim Ed had never seen a nickname fall so far from the mark. The young man towered over him. He thought it fortunate that Shorty seemed benign. He wouldn't want to have him for an enemy unless he had someone even bigger for a friend. As Shorty approached, Jim Ed pointed his chin at Glory B as she rode toward the calves.
Your girlfriend?
I hope so. With Glory B, it's hard to say.
You've got my sympathy.
A big car drove up to the outside fence and stopped in the shade of a huge live oak. An elderly woman took her time getting out from behind the wheel. She wore a cowboy-style felt hat. Its crown had little shape, and its brim was flat. It was for shade, not for appearance. Glory B waved from the saddle. The woman returned the wave and leaned against the fence, her eyes warm with pride as she watched the girl. Wes Hendricks removed his hat and walked over to speak to the woman in a manner indicative of deep respect.
That's Glory B's grandmother, Lavinia Dawson, and Miss Livy, they call her. Her daddy was old Major Chatfield, started this ranch.
The lady reflected a quiet dignity, which evidently had not made the transition into the third generation.
Maybe she'll order her highness out of the branding pen.
Shorty shook his head.
It's always been understood this ranch will belong to Glory B someday, if cheap cattle don't bankrupt it first. The old lady wants her to be prepared.
Jim Ed half hoped Glory B would miss her first loop, but the girl caught a calf's hind feet and dragged him between Shorty and Jim Ed. She had chosen one of the largest calves, still unbranded.
Grab him, Pilgrim!
She had similar good fortune with several more throws, to Jim Ed's frustration. But finally she missed one. Jim Ed smiled. She rebuilt the loop and missed again. Glory cast Jim Ed a look of irritation.
Let's see how you laugh now, Pilgrim.
She roped a hefty calf around the neck instead of the heels, turned the horse, and dragged the calf out. It jumped and bawled and kicked.
You've had it easy so far. Now throw this one, will you?
Jim Ed looked at Shorty, but the football player grinned and backed away.
He's all yours!
Jim Ed sensed that the attention of everybody in the corral now centered on him. Most of the people probably hoped to see him catch one of those flailing hoofs in his mouth. He reached over the pitching, bellowing calf and tried to find a handhold. The calf's supple hide slipped free of his fingers. He caught a hoof against his shin, shooting pain all the way up his leg. He managed finally to get one arm around the calf's neck and one hand under the flank.
You got him now!
It just takes brute strength and awkwardness.
Jim Ed had the awkwardness. He managed somehow to wrestle the animal to the ground. Dirt burned his eyes and scratched his throat, but he felt a glow of satisfaction for not having pulled away from the challenge. The calf lay wrong, and Shorty helped him turn it over, so the left side was up to receive the brand. Jim Ed held on while the branding iron and the knife did their work. Shorty smiled in silence. When they let the calf go, he turned to Jim Ed.
I'll show you a simpler way of doing that. If she drags another one in here by the neck, you let me take him.
For the other crew, Glory B roped each calf by the heels so it was easier to handle. But each time Shorty's and Jim Ed's turn came, she purposely caught a calf around the neck. Shorty showed Jim Ed how to grab the animal while it was in the midst of a jump and used leverage to throw it on its side. It looked easy when Shorty did it. Jim Ed knew by the way Glory B swung the loop that she intended to hand him another bellowing, pawing, kicking present. She made a catch and jerked up the slack, then turned and came spurring, grinning wickedly. The calf took a different view. The moment the noose drew tight around its neck, it began jumping, bawling, running until it hit the end of the rope and was jerked back abruptly. Instead of letting itself be dragged, it set out in a run toward Glory B. The rope went slack and the calf ran under the horse. Startled, the roan made a jump and tangled its feet in the trailing lariat. The calf hit the end again, bawling, doubling back. The horse stumbled and went down, slamming Glory B to the ground. Jim Ed realized with a cold shock that the rope had become tangled around her. Between the threshing horse and the frantic calf, that rope could crush her ribs or even break her neck.
Glory B! Oh!
Shorty started toward her, then tripped and fell. Other men came running, but Jim Ed was the nearest. He fished a knife from his pocket and opened the blade. The horse seemed about to get up. Jim Ed threw his weight against the roan and thrust the blade between the rope and Glory B's ribs. The rope parted. The calf ran back toward the others, kicking at the trailing length of lariat that stirred a thin line of dust. The horse scrambled to its feet in a panic, his shoulders striking Jim Ed and knocking him rolling. He looked straight up at the big roan belly, the sharp hoofs striking soft ground on one side of him and then the other. Pain lanced his side and most of the breath was knocked out of him. A hoof had struck him a glancing blow across one shoulder as the horse tried to fight clear of him. Half blinded by dirt, Jim Head was not sure which direction to crawl and get out of the way. He felt strong hands grab him and strong arms pull him clear. Shorty Bigum, he realized. Glory B was still fighting for control of the panicked roan. When Jim Head was breathing again and he had cleared the dirt from his eyes, he turned to see what had become of Glory B. She was standing on the ground, patting her trembling horse on the neck.
I'm all right. I was never in any trouble. I'm fine.
But her face was pale, betraying the scare she had suffered. Lavinia Dawson strode to Jim Head.
Are you all right?
Fine. Just fine.
Wes stood in the corner of the pen with his back turned. He held a tin cup so loosely that water spilled onto the ground without his seeming to notice. Bill Roper had gone to Wes's side and was talking quietly to him. Lavinia Dawson joined Roper. Jim Head got his legs back under him. He moved toward Glory B.
I'm glad you're not hurt.
For a moment, her eyes were soft, and he thought she might thank him, but she held up the cut end of a lariat.
Pilgrim, do you know what a good rope costs?
The anger rose above the aching of new bruises and the soreness from the morning's work.
More than gratitude, evidently.
Jim Head turned away from her. He found his hat buried in the sand. The roan horse had stepped on it. As he dusted it against his leg, the decorative green feathers floated off in six directions. His purple t-shirt was ripped all the way down the front. He might just as well throw it away.
That's my thanks for helping her. A crushed hat and never mind.
Jim Head started toward his grandfather.
Pilgrim, wait.
He halted, but did not turn around. She came up even with him and reached out as if to place her hand on his arm, but stopped short of doing it.
Look, I hope my horse didn't hurt you.
If it did me any good, I'll be glad to pay you for it.
He tried to straighten the battered hat. One feather clung, but it looked so forlorn that he pulled it loose and let it go.
That's some improvement.
A matter of opinion.
Bill Roper walked up, looking worriedly back over his shoulder.
Tater, Mrs. Livy and I think you better take your granddaddy home.
What's the matter with him?
Yeah, his face went plum gray for a minute. Had to take a nitroglycerin pill.
Nitroglycerin?
Roper's eyes were grave.
I reckon you didn't know he's got a heart condition.
Jim Head's mouth felt as if it were still half full of dirt.
Nobody told me.
Not many know about it.
Roper's face twisted. He was plainly not used to giving unsolicited advice.
May have given you the notion he hadn't got much use for you. That's because he hadn't found much common ground between you yet. But his heart liked to have quit on him when he seen you in trouble. You take care of him, Tater. He's a special old man.
I'll see if he'll go.
He went to the patch of shade beneath the big live oak where his grandfather leaned against the fence beside Lavinia Dawson. Wes's face had regained most of its color, but he looked dead tired.
Let's go home, Dadu.
Wes was surprised, then pleased.
You ain't called me that since you was a little button.
I just slipped out. I'll get our horses.
The work ain't done here yet.
You already healed most of the calves. Why don't you go on home and lay down? We'll call for your help again another day.
Wes considered, glancing at Glory B and her grandmother.
I'm doing fine, but we gave Tater more exercise than he's used to. I'd better take him in so he can rest.
Bill Roper gave Jim Head a wink that spoke of relief.
Yeah, he looked like he needs it.
Jim Head started for the gate. Glory B's grandmother caught his arm. Her face showed the lines of age, but her eyes were the strong brown of her granddaughter's.
Young man, I want to thank you.
Jim Head had never learned how to accept expressions of gratitude with grace. He moved away.
I better get my grandfather home.